You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate Radio. Well, the ship is a wreck, shit stains the deck as Michael Hollow's fellas make more. And Billy is a worry that he's got the scurvy, cause Chris ate all the limes in store. Pirate Radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate Radio. Now Roy is a chum when he's on the rum, he's the glue when we spring a leak. And Stu is a mess, he does less and less, and Greg sounded worse each week. Pirate Radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate Radio. Someone yelled ahoy, who the hell's cabin boy? Somebody named Tony, who knows? Once we got the skip, well, a mean jump ship, cause he knew we would sail to gold. Pirate Radio with the ship and crew, we got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the Pirate Radio.
Bunch of different business stuff I wanted to get to with David Sampson. And this isn't a local issue, but I'm just curious what he makes of the idea that the Colorado Rockies, as part of a grift, are getting rid of a player. They've gotten rid of a player to St. Louis, Arenado. $50 million they paid to get rid of him. And it reminded me of some of the Stanton stuff, except the Stanton stuff was a contract that was $200 million bigger than the one we're talking about with Arenado. So what happened with the Rockies here? They were going to compete a couple of years ago, but now they don't feel like competing anymore. They can't afford to compete. What is it?
Well, first of all, you use grift as though you know what that is. There's no grift. Did they get a new ballpark because they promised to keep payroll up like we did in Miami?
That was your grift.
We had a grift. I just don't know why you're saying they had a grift.
Because you're paying $50 million. You're telling your fan base, hey, we're about winning. And then 2 years later, you're like, never mind. Let's just get rid of this contract.
Oh, my
and
God.
Give $50
million. I just realized, Dan, can you imagine a company paying somebody not to work for that company? Who would ever do that?
$50 million, David? Paying $50 million to get rid of your signature player?
You're just talking zeros. Here's how it works. When you sign Nolan Arenado, you're competing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. You've made the playoffs in 2017 and 18. You feel like you have a chance. You want to keep your hometown player, best third baseman. All of a sudden, your team stinks, and you realize that in the NL West, you can't compete because the Padres have passed you by. So you have this epiphany that not only are we not going to win the division, but we're not going to make the wild card. Therefore, there's no reason to have Arenado and pay him his $30 million a year. And he doesn't want to be here because he's a baby. So we got to trade him and he's got a no trade clause. So all they did is they found a team that would take him and they paid enough money that they saved $150 million. So yes, they're paying out $50 million for him not to play, but they will be better off in the long run without him as a miserable player for a team that has no chance to win.
Yeah, but what kind of mentality is that? You can't have that many teams having that kind of mentality. The Padres have passed us by, therefore we're going to trade away and pay someone to take our best player? That's ridiculous.
No, it's knowing where you are in the cycle of winning. Every team other than the Dodgers and Yankees, even the Red Sox go up and down, as you know if you're a Red Sox fan. Teams have windows of opportunity. The Padres were crap, and then they got better. They signed Machado, and now they're ready to win, so they bring in Blake Snell and Yu Darvish, and they're ready. Other teams in that division then are on the downside. Eventually, the Padres will not be able to have everybody signed. They're not going to be good for years and years. This is their moment. When they go back down, then one of the Rockies or Diamondbacks will replace them on the upswing.
What is the most valuable thing in this trade? The prospects they got back, $50 million, or Arenado? Seriously, what is, if you have to rank the, because they basically gave away their best player. They paid for the privilege of giving away one of their best players.
No, but they saved themselves. That's like saying the Marlins made a bad deal when they traded Stanton to the Yankees. The Marlins saved for the moment their franchise by getting rid of that obligation. And remember, the Marlins are paying $30 million to get rid of Stanton.
Right.
Well, how come you're not commenting on that?
I have commented on that. It's been commented on. That was part of the aforementioned grift of yours.
No, because you couldn't have commented because it just happened. So I literally don't know what you're talking about. The Marlins had to give $30 million only when Stanton opted into the last 7 years of his deal, which he just did in the last 2 months.
That was part of your deal with them, that you were going to send them cash considerations if he opted back in after that part of the deal, no?
No, I was not with the team when Stanton was traded. I had been fired already.
Okay, my bad then.
Fair point.
So when you look at what it is that has happened with Stanton and the specifics, what could you tell me about the lawsuit that you guys had to settle this week?
Well, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, so, is that a sensitive area? Is that some sort of sensitive area?
I didn't realize you had those.
I didn't realize we had production meetings before talking to you, and I just had to pivot quickly because you boxed me in on Stanton.
Well, sometimes with settlements, they can't really talk about it.
Well, if he can't talk about it, he can't talk about it.
But I'm going to talk about it.
Yes!
Here's the deal. I was told by my lawyers I can't talk about it. And the good news is that I don't really care because I don't work for the Marlins, and I have no skin in the game any longer. Here's the deal, and it's a pretty simple deal. There was a provision when we negotiated with the county and the city back in 2009 that if Jeffrey ever sold the team, that the county and city of Miami would get a percentage of the profit. What they didn't realize is that profit, quote unquote, was a defined term. When you sign a contract, there are defined terms. Every word means something that has a capital letter. Profit was defined in a full paragraph. And what that means is just because you sold the team for $1.2 billion and bought the team for $158 million, that is wholly irrelevant to whether or not a profit with a capital P was made according to the terms of the contract. So we submitted our calculation of Jeffrey Luria's profit with a capital P to the county and the city, which showed that by selling the team for $1.2 billion, Jeffrey Luria lost $170 million.
Grift, total grift.
Listen, you're comparing me to Annette Bening and to John Cusack, and I couldn't be more proud. That I take that as a compliment.
How did you guys finagle that move? Is it creative bookkeeping? Is it that the city wasn't paying attention that sports teams are creative when it comes to defining profit?
No, this had nothing to do with our annual profit. This simply had to do with what the definition of profit is once the team is sold, which means that while the team is sold for $1.2 billion, you take a bunch of deductions like taxes that are paid, and there's a whole list of deductions, and then you get to a new purchase price. And then you count what Jeffrey paid for the team, not as $158 million in the agreement. And by the way, this is all public, ladies and gentlemen. There is nothing grifty about this. Everybody can read the provision, the non-relocation on the Intragoogle. And so the base of the team is not 158 million. It goes up every year and up every year. And therefore, the difference between what the team was bought for, quote unquote, and what the team was sold for, quote unquote, was negative $170 million. 5% of negative $170 million is a grand total of
negative zero. Negative something.
So we got sued by the county because they wanted money. We then entered into negotiations with them. And the way we enter negotiations, whenever you're sued, you do the following calculation. You add up what your legal fees are going to be. You add up what the expected loss would be in a lawsuit. So let's say you're being sued for $100 million, but there is a 10% chance of losing. Therefore, you are expected to lose $10 million. You with me on that math?
Yep.
A 10% chance of losing a $100 million lawsuit is valued at $10 million. You then add up the legal fees to defend yourself. If you assume those are $5 million, you are then willing to settle at $15 million. That is how you decide whether you are going to settle a lawsuit. It has nothing to do with whether you did anything wrong or right. It is simply a money equation. We calculated what we should settle for, and our answer was zero. That is what we should have settled for. Having gone through this for 2 years, we let the county and city know that our calculation was zero. Good luck. We then just decided, because Jeffrey was in a very giving mood, that he would be willing to settle at $4.2 million. That settlement has been agreed to by the city and by the county administrations. The city commission approved it. The county commission deferred the item. They have not approved it yet, and they will decide in 2 weeks whether they will approve it, and then the settlement will be done, and the county will get and city $4.2 million.
That's not a giving mood. That's you guys calculated what the attorney fees would be and decided that $4 million is less than that. Get out of here with Jeffrey Luria and giving mood.
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Giving mood? What are you talking about?
I mean, zero to 4.2 million.
What are you talking about? That's not Jeffrey Luria being giving. That's he just decided he did simple math, and the law, the lawyers were going to cost more than that.
I just can't tell. Was that a declarative statement or an
interrogative statement? It's a question. It ends in a question.
Most questions have some sort of vocal inflection.
All right. What do you think, Stugatz? You want to ask it for me?
Declarative or?
Yes or no? You just didn't want to pay any more attorneys.
I'm your captain now.
What can you tell us about where the Marlins find themselves these days? Because we're a few years into this Jeter stuff, and they made the playoffs, and that was nice, and it was an aberration, and the sample size was small, but there is at least a little bit of on-field success momentum. But I can't tell that there's any off-field success momentum, and I got to think the Marlins are getting hit particularly hard by everything that's happening right now, just like all baseball teams are. So your guess would be what on what's going to happen here with the Marlins over the next couple of years, just financially?
Yeah, they're screwed. They are completely underwater, and they are desperate for money. If you have the ability, maybe you could sell your RSS feed or somehow sell some memorabilia from the show, but you got to become a Diamond Club season ticket holder. You've got to give them a couple million dollars a year and then get all your friends to do the same. And then maybe the Marlins can be okay. They are, and by the way, Billy, not just one hat. I need you to buy 1,000 hats and then 1,000 jerseys and then go to every game. Here's the problem. Derek Jeter made all these promises to the owners because he had no skin in the game at all. He put in $25 million that then got paid, that's getting paid back $5 million a year over his five-year contract. And other people put in a lot of money to buy the team. They did not expect to be losing money. Their projections had them making money by now. And COVID hit, number one. But number two, they never got a naming rights deal. Number three, they never got a new TV deal. They have no TV deal with the season commencing. Number four, they spent all that money to get rid of the home run sculpture, to get rid of the way the Diamond Club was built, to change the stadium. They put a ton of money into it, and they got no payback because there's no season ticket holders. So it turns out that all the things that Jeter said he could do better than I could do, he's done them as badly as I did them. And the owners have had capital call upon capital call, which is what happens when you have to pay players. You have to get the money from somewhere. And they usually would get it from revenue sharing and from fans. And now revenue sharing is way lower. Fans are not allowed in games, but players are still getting paid. So they borrowed the money. So they have a lot of debt, and that's it. They have a problem. I wouldn't be surprised if they have to sell their team, guys.
I was just going to ask you, would you assume, guess, or know whether or not Sherman has to sell the team?
Well, you can never know because he could just reallocate his assets from his other part of his life, right? So at what point does he say, uncle, like, I don't care enough that I have Derek Jeter's cell phone number. I don't care enough that I get to sit down and watch games with him and my children and grandchildren because there's so many other owners here who are tired of putting money in. What I can speculate is that that team is going to be for sale again because they are going to realize that Jeter, A, doesn't know how to run a team, and B, it's not working in Miami.
David, what could they sell it for?
Well, I'm putting a group together to offer to buy the team for $600 million.
It's half of what it is that it was bought for. It's probably worth in the middle, right? The reason he's offering $600 million is because it's worth $900 million. He feels like if he starts at $600 million, they start at $1.2. What do you imagine? Well, he's not going to sell it for any less. He's not going to sell it a couple of years later for anything less than $1.2, is he?
Might not have a choice.
There is zero chance that anyone will offer $1.2 billion for that team. Zero. There's zero chance that anyone should have offered $1.2 billion 3 years ago. But it turns out there was 100% chance. But you can't account for stupidity and ego. You just can't account for it.
So you imagine what happens with Derek Jeter. You imagine that he lasts the 2 years or he's gone at the end of the 2 years or what?
I think Tom Brady better start house hunting.
So you think that that tenure is going to end before the 2 years are up?
No, he's going to try to stick it out the 2 years because he's getting paid. And then he gets his money back and retains the small ownership piece he has. So he's not going to walk away from that. He's not Deshaun Watson who's going to, or Le'Veon Bell who's going to say, I'll sit out a year.
What is the biggest mistake they've made? Was it assuming that they could do a better television deal than you did? Going into a season without a television deal, that feels very Expo-y.
It seems like the price they paid for the team was the biggest mistake they made.
Stu, that's it. I mean, let's face it. That was the problem. They were not well capitalized enough in order to cover. Like Steve Cohen paid a lot of money for the Mets, but he kept money to cover losses. The Marlins did not do that.
Now you say when you say Jeter doesn't know how to run a team, I assume you just mean from like the business aspect of it, which is the most important part, because from all the measurements you see and can read, like the farm system is better. They made the playoffs. I know it was a weird short season, but you could make the argument that the team, like on the field, has made improvements.
Oh, listen, if those young players, if some of them turn out to be what they've all said they're going to be, then yes. I mean, he took all the credit when he got rid of Mike Hill. He was very clear that Mike Hill, I mean, very clear. He said, you know, Mike, you didn't do anything. I did it all with Gary Denbow. And that's why they got rid of Mike Hill. And yeah, they made the playoffs, but 2020 is an aberration in all ways. And I give them credit for, you know, being in the expanded playoffs. I'm super happy. It's not like I root against the Marlins. I just root against Jeter. I want them to win, and I want it to be because of the players that Mike Hill got or that we got. I want Brian Anderson to be the best player on the team. But he just has not delivered on the business side, and that's what matters. He spent a lot of money. He had the owner spend a lot of money in the Dominican, which is a waste of money. He had the owner spend a lot of money to get rid of the home run sculpture, which was a waste, and to build that whole center field area. There's just been a lot of money spent that was silly, and there's going to be, believe, mark my words, the Marlins have to go to the county and ask for money just like we did to build the stadium. They've got to go to the county and ask for money to maintain the stadium. That's coming soon.
In your negotiations with Jeter, which is the one that you feel like you got past him or them? It might just be the asking price, where you got past them something that you knew that you were proud to get past them because they didn't notice.
So you're asking me a question that is gonna that could rise to fraud, and so let me be clear how this works. When you negotiate to sell something, you cannot misrepresent anything regarding the actual running of your business. During the due diligence process, you show them numbers, and I represent that those numbers are true and accurate numbers. What I am allowed to do is be self-deprecating to the point of night sweats. And what I was very clear with Jeter is that every reason why we have so few season ticket holders, every reason why we didn't win on the field, all of that is because of how bad I am at my job. And so I made it clear to play to his ego, which was so big it could barely fit in a negotiating room, that when he walks in to Fox in Los Angeles, he'll get a better TV deal. When he walks in to a season ticket holder event or a corporate sponsor event, he'll get a naming rights deal. I told him the most we could get was $5 million from Pepsi, let's say. You're going to get $10 million for sure, so good. You're Derek Jeter. And Derek Jeter sucked that up like it was raisinettes. He couldn't stop. Because he said that's exactly what's going to happen. And he told Bruce Sherman that was going to happen. He then went into the rooms to make that happen, and none of it happened.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Can you stop sucking up raisinettes at Lebatard?
Never heard that before, got to be honest with you.
Well, that seems to be his favorite. I don't think of it as something that you eat with that kind of enthusiasm, but that's why I put it up as a poll question. Can you tell us, can you explain to us as you see this happen, as you see some of this stuff play out, and everything that you thought was going to happen seems to be happening, and on top of that, a pandemic, the specifics of not having a TV deal. I thought that that was the area where everyone thought the money could be made. I thought the TV deals are why the Dodgers are able to blow everyone out of the water. The TV deals are important to everything. Not having a TV deal. David, there are very few teams, right? At the end with the Expos, before they moved, you guys didn't have a television deal. You had only a radio deal. Was it only French radio? Like, you guys didn't have a deal there. It's very rare for a baseball team to not have a television deal.
Yes, it is rare. And when you're a team like the Marlins, where you are not getting a lot of gate revenue, you have to get two things. You have to get local broadcast revenue, and you have to get revenue sharing. And those are the two biggest sources of revenue the Marlins have. The Marlins will have a TV deal when the season starts. But I also know it's not going to be a better deal than what we told Jeter we had, and he could have had us execute during the course of the negotiation. And the reason he did not execute it is it enabled him to put in his projections a much larger number, which made the numbers and projections look better to specific investors who were giving him money to reach the $1.2 billion asking price. If there's a set TV deal, then you can only put in to your projections what the actual money you're getting for your TV deal is. When it's uncertain, you get to speculate that it's going to be much greater. And what happened was the world changed, and now it's a Bally-owned TV market. There's no competition. The Marlins cannot start their own network because the Tampa Bay Rays, the Heat, and the Panthers all have separate TV deals with Fox, or now it's Sinclair, and now it's Bally's. So the Marlins have no way to do any sort of leverage with Bally's, other than maybe having Jeter stay at Bally's hotel a lot in Vegas with Jordan, but there's no way to get a lot of money out of Bally's, and that's the problem.
Are you saying Jeter fudged the numbers?
It's not fudging.
What is it?
It's when you buy a business, you make projections of how it's going to go. Imagine like you're starting a media business, let's say, and you're trying to get investors. And what you say is, here's what we think is going to happen. We're going to have this person doing this and that person doing this. And we're going to have people paying us to do this. We're going to have sponsors and this and that. And our total revenue is going to be $100 million. Our expenses are only going to be $50 million. And we're going to make $50 million a year for all of you investors. And I read that with all the disclaimers, and I say, wow, I totally believe in you, Derek Jeter. That's exactly what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, you don't get the $100 million in revenue. All of a sudden, you don't get the talent at only $50 million. It costs you $75 million, and you don't make the money you thought you'd make. That's not fudging. That's called a projection. I am projecting what I think will happen, and when it doesn't happen, you just get fired. You don't get charged with a crime.
After the selling price and after the TV deal, I'm assuming those are 1-2, what was the number presented to investors that was the most off?
Season ticket holders in attendance. They assumed that the reason why people weren't going to games was because of me and Jeffrey, and that the minute Jeffrey and I were gone, that everyone would again embrace going to Marlins games. And it simply has not happened at the average ticket price that they had projected. So what they assume is attendance goes up, and those people who go to games will pay a higher price because the team on the field will be better and there'll be no more Samson.
Baseball is pretty much dead here by that description as a business, unless you get hot and do some winning thing with a lot of players, and then Miami will embrace that. But your failed experiment and you getting out of the game sort of illustrates what it is that's happening here, right? The market is dead. How does the market get rehabbed?
Do you know that Larry Lucchino in 2000, do you remember that name? He used to be the president of the Red Sox. He was hired by baseball to come to Miami before John Henry sold the Marlins to Jeffrey and to give Rob Manfred and Bud Selig an explanation as to whether baseball could work in Miami and whether a stadium could get done. His conclusion is no owner will be able to come in and get a stadium because the political climate is so bad. And even if they do get a stadium, it is very unlikely they will ever be able to be anything other than revenue sharing recipients. And that was way back then.
Billy, you can't, you have been around a long time as David Sampson does some of his David Sampsoning, and much of it can be accused, because he's a former Marlin employee, as having an axe to grind, even though I believe he tells you an unvarnished, sort of not gift-wrapped truth when he's talking about this stuff. What do you make of what Sampson's saying right there, Billy, as a Marlins fan?
Well, I was wondering if David thought, because when you were here, you'd hear it. People would say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to go to games until Jeffrey's gone. As soon as he's gone, I'm going to go to games. So I wonder how much of it was just people talking shit, which a lot of it was, and how much of it was, you know what? They did the same thing that we've seen here done a number of times, where they get rid of all of the star players. Like, had they stuck out with that team for a little bit and lost money, because obviously they would have lost money if they would have re-signed those players, do you think that would have impacted attendance in any way, or do you think it was kind of like a no-win situation for them?
I actually had a conversation with them about this during the negotiation. I knew that given the purchase price, and this makes me not happy, and you will be angry, I knew that they were going to be trading Stanton and Yelich and Ozuna and Realmuto, because I knew from their projections what was going to be required with payroll. And I understood that the only way to get payroll down would be to trade those players. However, what Jeter had said is, listen, you had all these great players. You guys never won 81 games. So the fans aren't going to be unhappy, because that those players who we had, you weren't winning with. So we're going to get rid of the players, get rid of the money, and then start over. It's going to take a few years, but I'm Derek Jeter. People will believe in the process, which is why you know what his talking points have been for these past 3 years. We had a lot of work to do when we got here. We had to fix a very broken organization, and we've got to show patience, and you know I'm not a patient guy. Have you heard Jeter say that, Billy?
Yeah.
Okay, so now in year four.
So do you think that that was just not understanding the market or the history with the fan base and thinking, hey, you know what? I'm Jeter. They'll forgive this if we turn around and we win.
I'm Jeter. I always win is what it sounds like. I always figure out how to win. I'm Jeter.
I'm Jeter. I'm a Hall of Fame shortstop. Therefore, I know exactly how to run the game.
David, I know there's ego involved, because you're Derek Jeter. Why wouldn't you have that ego? You're David Sampson. Why wouldn't you have that ego? But it sounds like the people you sold the team to are dumb. That's what it sounds like to me.
I would never call someone dumb. I would say desperate is a better word than dumb. Remember, Derek Jeter had retired. He was looking for something to do. He wanted to stay in the game. Having the opportunity to own was something that was in his dreams. And he got matched up with Bruce Sherman, which was a dream matchup, because Bruce Sherman let Derek Jeter do everything. And that was Bruce Sherman's big mistake. Letting Derek Jeter negotiate.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
I want to talk to you about some business stuff, the high-end stuff. Bruce Sherman, does he get pounded by what the last 2 weeks have been with any of the hedge fund stuff? I don't know the details about where his money comes from or what kind of peril or how liquid he is or isn't.
The Marlins have increased their debt. There's no doubt, because all teams have gotten more debt capacity. Bruce Sherman is invested in the market, and there are some people who have done very well in the market and some people who have not. I don't know his portfolio, But if you're asking whether or not he can afford to keep owning the team, the answer is yes. If you're asking whether he's willing to keep funding the team, that is a separate question. And by the way, do you ever get on Sherman for not being around? Because you used to get on Jeffrey, who wouldn't be around and talk to the media because he didn't like the media and I was the mouthpiece. Do you get on Sherman? Where's he been for 4 years? And that's not a personal axe to grind. I'm just curious if you're consistent.
For three years, I've been yelling that we need to smoke him out. I do it on the microphone, but that's the length I go to is demanding that we smoke him out. And then I smoke the room without using smoke. I find out that I have more roar than reach and he doesn't get smoked out. I smoked out Manfred and I got cocky and thought I'd be able to smoke out Sherman after that.
It's weird, the smoked out term that you use. Also, there's a pandemic going on. I mean, no one's around, David. No,
to David's point, Dan was calling Sherman's office demanding he sound off on something before he even played a game as owner.
Thank you,
yelling at the secretary.
Thank you. I was yelling at a secretary on air, Dave. That's as far as my reach carried us. But he didn't come out. We were like demanding that he come out. And he's like, nah, I'm not coming out. And I'm not even going to tell you I'm not coming out. I'm just going to stay not smoked out.
Do the Marlins, the new Marlins PR guy who replaced PJ, I think his name is John or Jason or something. Does he give you guys players to appear on your show?
This has been a source of some contention here. No, players have dried up for us. We tried to get Mattingly and some playoff players during the playoffs, and that dried up for us. I think you're the reason for that, though. If I had to take a guess on why it is that's happening, is because look at how we've spent the last 26 minutes. Like, think
why would they? Like,
Stu Gotts of all people just said, "Man, you made Derek C. Jeter sound dumb." Stu Gotts of all people. Like, I wonder why. And you're like, "No, not dumb, just desperate." My guess is that's the reason.
Maybe, or maybe you're just too smart for them.
Let's move on to some other subjects here because I want to get into this ABC News and ESPN report. Clinicians fearing that the NFL's concussion settlement program protocols discriminate against black players. It's a long story. It's an expansive story, well reported. I'll get to the details on that in a second. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on everything that happened with GameStop and AMC and hedge fund managers and Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, as well. So one part I want to talk to you about the business stuff, but I want you to also mention, or I want you to also get into what happened with the Mets owner.
So Steve Cohen, for a living, runs a hedge fund. He used to run other people's money, but then he got accused of sexual misconduct and insider trading, and the SEC investigated him. And what he did, in addition to paying a huge fine, he said, okay, from now on, I'm not going to run other people's money. I'm just going to run my own money. So he started a new company that just invests his own money. One of his investments was in another guy who invests a bunch of money. That guy lost a lot of money in the GameStop situation because he had a position that didn't win. And what Steve Cohen said is, I have to help him because I'm trying to protect my initial investment by investing more money. It's the equivalent of you owning a house, and when there's a roof leak, you say, I better invest money in a new roof or I'm going to lose my entire house and its contents. Or I better invest in brakes on my car because I could lose my life and get into a crash. So all Steve Cohen did was invest extra money to protect an initial investment in its simplest terms. It has zero impact on his ability to sign players. It has zero impact on his ability to raise the payroll or choose not to raise the payroll. It is not the same as the Wilpons losing a ton of money in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. There's no Ponzi scheme here. This is just Steve Cohen needing to cover a bad investment by throwing good money after what he hopes will be good again. In terms of what you guys are doing, I have major issues with it for the simple reason that I believe you are all abusing your platform. And it is all fun and games when you guys do what you do. And I love it. I get the show. But it's one thing to have fun and games at my expense or at your expense or at Stu's intelligence. That's one thing. When you are doling out investment advice, even as a joke, that's no longer a joke or about getting the show. People are actually spending their money investing in this crap, and GameStop is crap.
Wait a minute, period. David, if you follow Mike Ryan's stock market advice after he wanders
That's on
over,
you, man.
If he wanders over to the table looking like or sounding like Ellis from Die Hard. And
if you consider it advice when I'm just screaming diamond hands, then that is totally on
allow,
you.
David, I will not allow you to blame. I will not allow you to blame Mike Ryan for giving in character as a spoof financial advice.
Hold on. Blaming Mike Ryan is not what I've done. And I want to be clear. I am telling you that you don't realize that people view the joking about investments differently than the joking about the other stuff that you guys joke about. And the fact is, people who are involved day trading for, or in trying to touch themselves in the market, they're all going to lose. Every single one of them. And what they're doing now is saying, it's okay. I'm doing it because I want to bring down the man. I'm doing it to show the inequities that exist on Wall Street and all of that. Give me a break. You're doing it to make money. Maybe not you guys, but other people are. And it's just not going
to
work.
Okay, turn your attention to the internet, not the show in which Billy and Stu Gotch keep telling me to sell. By the way, GameStop's up this morning, baby. Diamond hands.
it's ridiculous.
I told him, David, he's never going to win, but he doesn't listen to me.
This is the other thing that we gave you in terms of advice. It's not only that Mike Ryan is in character wearing a bad sports coat and just reeking of Wall Street cocaine and cologne. It's on top of that, we told you, don't be an idiot here and fight the hedge fund guys with GameStop.
We had a reporter on from Bloomberg that very day telling me what an idiot I was. And you know what I said? I've been in this since Monday. Don't tell me what to do.
AMC back in the eights, by the way.
Hell yeah.
The fact that you guys are following these stocks makes me laugh because that is sort of insulting to people who do this for a living, who we need. It's the equivalent, and I love having and being a guest on other podcasts, and as part of Nothing Personal, that's what I try to do is interact with people as much as possible. I want people to grow into podcasters and learn the trade better. That's totally different than me using my Wall Street hat when I was on Wall Street at Morgan Stanley and trying to somehow use that as a way to get amateurs to invest. That is just not, it's a different world. People feel differently about their own money than they do about their own humor.
Jeff Bezos steps down as CEO. Is that just something that can be explained, or does that have to do with, you know, some of the stories you're hearing about Amazon for years taking the tips of its drivers and a union being formed in its warehouses? Like, or is it just a regular thing? Rich guy steps down.
Yeah, it's regular. Here's what you find is that running a company when you start it out of a garage, let's say, that's fun. And then you build it and then you build it and then you do $1 billion every 30 hours instead of every quarter. That's fun. But all of a sudden you realize you're running a huge company and it's overwhelming to both be the richest man in the world and to actually run the everyday operations of a company. So he's just being kicked upstairs. He's still going to be involved in the strategy of Amazon, but he just wants someone else to be the one to deal with the investors' calls, to deal with Wall Street, to deal with the unions, to deal with all the crap. And he's earned that right. So this was part of the normal succession plan.
It's an enormous job, correct? Is there a way to articulate to people what Jeff Bezos' life looked like absent delegation?
So even when you delegate, when you start a company on your own, it's your own baby, right? And you can delegate all you want, but even when you're away, you're still thinking about it. And Amazon is not just a company anymore. He's responsible for the world's exchange, right? I mean, think about what Amazon has become, and it's just time for someone else to take over. And I don't blame him. He's going to turn into Bill Gates to me, where he'll be involved sort of on the edges of Amazon, but he'll get much more involved on the charity side. My guess is you're going to see a foundation like the Gates Foundation, much more active. And I don't blame him for that.
So Stugatz, this story, David Sampson, before we get to the movie that he's going to review, clinicians fear NFL's concussion settlement program protocols discriminate against black players. This is ABC News. It's part of something that ESPN is participating in. And I'll just read to you four paragraphs. At the crux of the controversy, the NFL's concussion settlement program manual recommends the use of a full demographic correction in which a player's cognitive test scores are compared to average scores or norms for similar demographic groups and then adjusted to account for expected differences in age, gender, education, and race. The practice, widely known as race norming, is in use across several different medical fields as a supposed safeguard against misdiagnosis. But because the norms assume that the average black player starts at a lower level of cognitive functioning than the average white player at the outset of their careers, the former players say. These are Najee Davenport is among the former players. Black players need to show larger cognitive declines than white players to qualify for compensation on this settlement. It's the $800 million concussion settlement. What the NFL is doing to us right now when they use a different scale for African Americans versus any other race, Davenport said, that's literally the definition of systemic racism. In response to questions from ABC News, an NFL spokesperson issued a statement saying that the concussion settlement, which has paid out more than $800 million to retirees and their families to date, was agreed to by all parties. What are your thoughts there?
Are you asking me or someone else?
I think he was asking you.
Well, did you think I was asking Stu Gantz?
Well, here, listen, this is a landmine question, right? And we were talking a little bit about this, and I was thinking about this and when I was reading the article. The way these settlements work is they don't just come out of thin air, and the distributions of class action settlements are done very, very carefully, and they are agreed upon before anybody gets a dollar, which means there are protocols that are agreed upon. Who's got the worst concussion? Who has the worst disability? Because they're going to get the most money, in theory, the most percentage money of the settlement. And what's being claimed now is that black players have to claim that they went from a point to another point where they have a worse cognitive decline than white people have to show. And they're saying that that's not fair to black players. What they're not saying, and this is not me commenting, and I'm not going to even say, you don't have to say you're not racist. Either you're not racist or you are racist. The reality is that players were aware of the settlement terms, lawyers and courts. Everybody agreed to the settlement terms. Everyone agreed in advance how players were going to be evaluated. It's not Roger Goodell looking at a player's color and saying, you get less money. It is doctors, it is judges, it is lawyers, and there is full and open and transparent communication and measurement. Whether or not racial norms are systemically racist, I can't comment on. I was talking to Roy before we started this show.
You can comment on that. I mean, it seems pretty clear that there are all sorts of biases, testing and beyond, that permeate our entire, everything from our system of justice to our system of education.
Yes, all of that is true, but that is not handled by the courts as part of a settlement of a legal action. The equivalent is, as I said to Roy, in my mind, I am 5'5", let's say he is 6'1". If we have to prove that we are getting money in a settlement because our knees hurt from playing on turf, and I have to jump as high as he jumps to touch something that is 7 feet in the air, and because I can't touch it, I get to say my knees are worse than his knees, he's got a complaint. Because I, by definition, by being shorter, can't reach a level that he can reach. He shouldn't get less money because of his knees, because he can reach something that I can't. That is the genesis of what people are saying here, that we are not using height, we're not using weight, we are simply using color. The reason why color is used.
And intelligence, not just color, intelligence as well. And some of the things that happen when you start testing intelligence on different races, and some of your standardized testing is done by white people in a world built for and by white people.
Right. I believe what you mean is cognitive ability, not intelligence. I don't think, I don't believe that money from the concussion settlement is going out according to your IQ or your ability to process information. I believe it's based on cognitive ability and the results of concussions. And that doesn't, by definition, make you less intelligent. It makes you less able to process information and to actually, with a concussion, you're like in a brain fog. Basically, you can't do anything. You can't work. You can't focus. You have headaches that are often very debilitating. And all the courts are saying is that one of the things we look at is where people's general cognitive decline has been. And if they're saying that there is a level they start from that changes from person to person, and race is one of the criteria they use to figure out your baseline cognitive ability, I am not in a position to comment on whether that should be one of the staples used.
It's interesting that the place that you went there was just whether or not you can win in a court of law, as opposed to the argument being posed by Najee Davenport and Kevin Henry. Not just whether they can win the lawsuit, but the merits of the lawsuit beyond the law. Just the idea of what it is that they're arguing. You just went straight to can they win, it felt like, versus how about sort of addressing what it is they're saying?
I think there's no question that there is systemic racism and racial inequality. I've been talking about it, nothing personal, for a very long time. But I'm not going to use the concussion settlement as a reason why. If you want to talk about all the systemic racism, you don't have to look very far than equal pay. You don't have to look very far than opportunity in the job market. That is where you can go. But it would be like a black player saying that he doesn't have a chance to be in the NFL because he's black, no matter what his skill level is. And I don't believe that owners pay players or are racist and manifest their racism in that way. They do it based on ability on the field. And by the way, owners don't take care of players post-retirement having nothing to do with color. They just didn't want to have to take care of them, period, because they knew that these players were getting hurt. They didn't care. They knew they were doping them up during games to get them back on the field, and they didn't care because all they cared about was them playing. And once they were gone from the team through release or retirement, that's the end of it. What's happening now is a reckoning for what owners have done and what the league has done, and I don't view it as a racial issue.
To be fair to the NFL is saying and making sure everyone know these are independent clinicians, third-party administrators in the process. Quoted, an NFL spokesperson is saying the NFL parties play no role in the independent clinicians' examinations, and any resulting diagnoses are reviewed by a neutral court-appointed claims administrator. Challenges to diagnoses are reviewed by a neutral court-appointed special masters and ultimately the court itself. But you should know if...
That's the whole thing, Dan, right? That's the whole issue. You can't accuse the NFL of systemic racism because of this. You can accuse them because of other things, but not because of this, because they have nothing to do with it. They put money into an account. That is all they do. After that, they literally have nothing to do with it.
What is the movie you're reviewing as we get you out of here today?
Mike told me to watch Disclosure, and it's actually a decent segue. Disclosure, not with Michael Douglas. Disclosure is a documentary that taught me about the trans world I had no idea about. And I had no idea that how offensive things were in the media. And they showed Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks. They showed Tootsie with Dustin Hoffman. Staples of my childhood. Staples. And I watched them as humor, and I still do. And I was not in a position to understand why anyone would watch that and say, wow, they're making fun of how I feel. Because I didn't feel that way. I was a boy who was a boy. And I was comfortable being a boy and didn't feel like I was a girl. So I couldn't appreciate that, much like I have no idea what it is to not be a person of privilege. I can't pretend I do. Those are the shoes that I have. So this documentary taught me more than a documentary has in a very long time. And the empathy I felt was not that all of a sudden I had a different view toward trans people. I had a different sensitivity toward how they look at things that are going on in the world of media and in the world of movies. And I'll tell you, it is, you look back at some movies and you can see the racism, obviously. And I was always aware of that. And I was always told that I could laugh at that. I could laugh at Gene Wilder in blackface in the movie Silver Streak. And I could laugh at C. Thomas Howell in blackface in the movie Soul Man. And now I look back with embarrassment and shame because it just didn't occur to me that laughing was hurtful. And now I watch Disclosure and learn the same thing about the trans community and the courage they have and Laverne Cox and et cetera, et cetera. It was a fabulous, fabulous documentary that I think everyone should watch.
One of the best things a documentary can do for me, if I can get just this out of a documentary, it will have been a positive experience for me, even if the rest of it wasn't any good. The idea of presenting you with something that you simply had never considered, something, just a viewpoint that had never struck you in any way to notice. And this is what you find in all the conversations in America these days about race, about sexuality, about the trans community, about everything you will find. I remember Amici talking about privilege and talking about empathy and talking about compassion, saying he had never considered the idea that he couldn't just be someone who jogged at night without worrying about anything. And yet a woman walks to her car at night and she's looking over her shoulder. And it's just not something I've ever done in my life. Not one time. When he was talking about privilege, it's the nature of privilege to not have considered any of these viewpoints before. So you're watching this documentary and you're being introduced to a world that you have given very little thought to.
Yeah. And you taught me this actually about blind spots. I used to think I had no blind spots professionally or personally. And it turns out I had so many blind spots personally that I just, they're by definition, you're not aware of them. And through therapy and through sort of self-awareness and actually being willing to learn something about yourself, I learned all these blind spots I have, and they don't go away very quickly. And that's one of the issues with racism, that sometimes systemic racism or the way you feel about a community is not necessarily because you feel that level of hatred or anger or anxiety or hate, or but you just don't think about it. You don't think about what it feels like to be black and watch someone in blackface or Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder. And you don't realize how hurtful it is when you're laughing at that. And that's a blind spot. And now I can see better. And I never knew anything about the trans community. Literally never, except Tom Hanks dressed like a woman, right? That's all.
See you later, Samson. We'll talk to you next week.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.